We this week are definitely in the midst of the fall tax season, and it's all the hecticness involved with it. So let's jump right in with Tuesday, when Google launched Android 11 after a long developer preview and beta period that started in February. There are a lot of unusual disturbances this beta period compared to the rest. It really started a month early, and it like last year it ended September. So Google is really taking its time with these cycles. There was obviously no I/O this year, so that was the biggest disturbance, and Google ended up holding the beta one for one more month. So despite all that, I would say that this was a pretty smooth cycle in terms of it was pretty stable pretty quickly.
Surprisingly so, yeah.
Yeah, I got my Pixel on the beta, I think one round earlier than I usually do. So yeah, it was pretty stable.
That being said, it wasn't the most sizable update, I would say. I think the biggest feature that people experience is the notification shade, and how one, there's conversations, and two, the music player, which they went with a design that I wish they didn't, because again, they had a more compact music player earlier on in beta one, right in the quick settings toggle next to 3x2 notification, quick settings toggles. And that was so much more compact. But the big complaint I'm seeing towards this new music player is how you only get 6 quick setting tiles when you expand the shade. And honestly, that's pretty disruptive and what people are desperately wanting changed going forward.
Yeah, I am still getting used to that change with the one less row.
Mm-hmm.
It still throws me off just a little bit.
Yeah, I don't have 3 pages worth now instead of just 2.
Yeah, especially since they added nearby share and screen recording. Like, there's generally more stuff that you want to fit in now, and that's out the window.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like my setup hasn't really changed since hasn't changed since Android 10, though.
Yeah, that's fair. Again, like, from in terms of the rest of the OS, nothing significant changed. Another complaint I would have is how the recent multitasking menu, it lost the row of shortcuts, and what they replaced it is with on the Pixel launcher is how you can have, if you leave a blank spot open, Android 11 can automatically suggest an app to use. And I tried it for a bit, but it's still not accurate. It duplicates more times than not, and the suggestions aren't that good.
Yeah, no, I tried that too, and I had to get rid of it within like an hour. It's just, like you said, it's just constant duplicates, and it's, you know, it was a feature I was genuinely hoping to use, because like on my home screen I have a camera icon, but I never use it because I use the quick press on the power button. Mm-hmm. I was hoping to just use that empty spot for most use apps, but most of the time it's either the app I was just in or some other app that I didn't even want to use. It's not accurate. I miss the old multitasking screen.
So it seems like the two of you would like it, but would just prefer it to have better knowledge of what you want.
Yes and no, because I use all 5 spaces, so I don't think I can spare a square, if you will.
I agree with you. That's where I'm at too. And I find that the home screen is about consistency. Like I go to the home screen, I know exactly where to tap. It's muscle memory at this point.
Yeah, I think this only exists because they took it out of the recent screen.
Yeah, it's
it felt like it fit better there. And it also worked better there because it didn't matter if you had a duplicate there.
Mm-hmm. So with that, what do you think of what's now in its place? The recent, screenshots and select for OCR. I use screenshot because it's no longer in the power menu. I'm still getting used to the new software screenshot button, but I haven't really used the OCR optical character recognition yet. So,
for some reason, I don't trust the screenshot in the recents. I in my mind, I have to take a screenshot with the hardware button now.
And there are no, the date and time and status bar icons are no longer there, which is good in some one respect and meh on the other.
Man, I didn't even know that much. So it shows how much I've tested that particular feature. Again, I just don't trust it.
Yeah. It wasn't worth the trade-off, if you ask me. Like, I can see how some people might like it, but I would rather there be a setting to choose one or the other, either have these two buttons or the suggestions.
It seems like it's all designed to surface that select button the select functionality, because selecting was already possible, right? It just wasn't, you had to know it was there.
Yeah.
And speaking of that select button, Android, Google obviously released Android 11 to AOSP. But the September launch on Tuesday also coincided with the next Pixel feature drop. And it was interesting how the Pixel team had that screenshot and select button as like a tentpole customization of more power features. And I don't see the direction they're going. And if we're on the topic of Pixel feature drops, it wasn't really a major feature drop, except for the Google Maps live view location sharing, which is not too many people are out in the world right now. So that's a unfortunate time to launch that.
Yeah, no, this particular feature drop just kind of fell off the radar.
I mean, yeah. I feel like part of it was just that we knew all of this stuff already. Like all of the other feature drops, it's either been just, you know, just barely hinted at, or it was something that we had to enable and find. This has all been publicly available in Android 11 through all of the betas.
And to a certain extent, it was underwhelming because I think all of us were expecting Columbus. If Kyle, you want to provide a recap.
Ah, yes, Columbus, a.k.a. The Double Tap, a nice Zombieland reference. It was supposed to be a new way to access the assistant, particularly on phones like the Pixel 4a and presumably the Pixel 5 and 4a 5G, which do not have the active edge to squeeze and get the assistant. There was a brief moment in the beta or developer preview period where you, with some finagling, thank you, Dylan, you can double tap the back of the phone to activate Assistant, among other gestures, actually, or among other activities like the camera and things like that. But there was supposed to be a double tap, and that didn't come through.
Yeah, I thought the Pixel 4a would have been the perfect time to do it. It would have been a given. It would have been available on the Pixel. The 5 and the 4a 5G. So, yeah, I guess we'll see what happens to that feature. But going back to Android, go ahead.
I was going to say it's just all software, so there's no reason why it couldn't still arrive for the Pixel 4a down the line.
Yeah. But anyways, going back to Android 11 proper, chat heads. What do we think about chat heads?
I turned those off for Facebook Messenger maybe 2-3 years ago. They're too distracting.
Yeah.
Yeah, for it's something I've never. I think it's a cool idea, and I always say, "Oh, I'll get so much use out of this," and then I never use it because it just breaks my workflow.
Yeah, as Stephen on Tuesday, he did a brief history tracing the origins of chat heads to the Facebook phone, the HTC First, and the Facebook Home Launcher. Yeah, it felt really good on day one. It was like a really novel, a really clever use case, like how you could push Android and stuff. But now it's a bit, I don't really know how to put it. It's superfluous. It's really,
it's to the right, I feel like to the right person, it's going to be a game changer.
Sure.
And just the three of us are not that person.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Go ahead.
I think it's a bit... Okay, so there's a bit of a cognitive overload, bubbles, visual overload rather than bubbles. It really gets in your face. Like this, people's avatar icons are bright and all that, and it jives with dark themes more times than not. And it's, I think if you have one conversation, sure, but I don't know in what scenario you're having an active and long conversation where you wouldn't just be in the full app because you're having a conversation, you're committing, you're spending time with the person talking with them. And I would think you'd have the full app, but I don't know, maybe there's a different population of people who are with the idea of having a constant group chat immediately accessible to them throughout the day. I don't know, maybe there's a group of people that like that.
I mean, I can picture uses for it, like maybe you're shopping online with someone, you're like helping them find, I don't know, like let's say a friend of yours needs a new laptop and you're kind of looking online and talking to them. There's like weird scenarios where it could work, but for the most part, my hot take on Android 11 bubbles is that they're the opposite of digital well-being.
Nice. Yeah. It's disruptive. And I don't know if it's a better way to do that. I think the Do people do quick replies from the notification shade, do you think? Is that like a common habit that you've picked up other people doing?
I do that pretty often, actually.
I know. Same. Anybody who has an Apple Watch does it.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm curious because they could build like a rich experience in notification shade, but they haven't chosen to. So yeah, bubbles. I think it was you, Ben, who did not like the conversation section.
I didn't at first, but I definitely have warmed up to that because I do like having all of my messaging apps at the top.
What apps are you seeing supported by that right now?
It's a better question to see what's not. I haven't had a single messaging app that hasn't shown up in that view.
Is Slack? I don't think Slack has done it yet, have they?
I'd have to check, but I think it does.
Oh, that's a thing. That is surprisingly, well, moment of truth. But speaking to those other apps that you've seen already there, that is quite fast adoption.
Hang on, I think it's automatic from the system. Hang on, Kyle, you got to do that again after I close it on my computer.
Yes. Nope, I see it under notifications.
Mine it does too. But I think in their mind, Slack might not be.
Yeah.
But like I know for a fact I've seen Telegram,
Voice.
Google Voice, regular SMS, and I think even Discord I've seen in there.
Discord makes sense, yeah. But so, Discord is just like Slack, so maybe.
No, that one's definitely more messaging. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a system based. It's not.
There's no way that many developers have actually adopted.
Because if I remember correctly, conversations and bubbles is the same thing, right? If you add support for conversations for the people's API thingy, well, maybe.
I don't think strictly.
Okay, that makes sense then. So yeah, anything else in Android you haven't proper?
We can talk about the Easter egg.
Yes, the Easter egg. Controls. I was going to say controls.
Oh yeah,
love it.
The same thing. It's the same thing. Yeah, controls are the Easter egg. The Easter egg is controls.
Yeah, it's. I thought I would like you like. Have more fun with the Easter egg, which is you collect cats that appear in bubbles by feeding them in an imaginary smart pet control thing. I thought I would like use that more often, but I've really forgotten about it and I don't have the time to use it. But yeah, it's whimsical. And I'm sure, I don't know, there's like 1,000 cats or something.
Sounds about right. Sounds like the correct number.
Yeah.
No, but the home controls is something I was really looking forward to, but I've been running my Pixel for the past couple weeks after finishing up on a dozen other things. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed that I'm really not using it that often. And I think part of that is just because in the back of my head, I know I can't get used to this because I keep switching phones and I know someone's going to mess it up.
Oh, fearing the future hurt. That's.
Well, okay. So if you look at it on the Pixel, you long press the power button, even on Android 10, and it goes to a power menu. If you long press it on OnePlus, on Samsung, I think even on LG now, it does not. It goes to a voice assistant or whatever you want to call Bixby. It's I know either that's going to mess it up or Samsung is going to force it to do smart things only or something is going to screw it up. And it's annoying me because I want to use it really bad.
Yeah, it's so good for smart lights. I barely use assistant voice commands. I barely use the smart display with the room and the lights anymore because it's so good.
All I have hooked up there is my Roomba. And I do use it that way, though, because even just saying the word Roomba is enough to set off my dog.
Aw. Okay. Aw. Yeah. It needs Google should have enforced it. I think the last we checked, it's not because they're not requiring vendors to use it forcibly. So that's a wee bit of a shame.
But, well, goes to Ben's thing of saying they could screw it up. So it's better to just not be there at all, right?
But it's like the promise is so there, especially well, this is in the app push Google Assistant, obviously.
I mean, the thing is, I think OnePlus and Samsung will use it, but I'm wondering if OnePlus starts using it, what are they going to do about their assistant gesture? Are they just going to have the option? They probably will. But Samsung, I feel like it's going to be Samsung Pay only on that menu. I feel like they are going to block Google Pay, and I don't know how they're going to do the design. I feel like they're going to mess up the design.
Yeah, that's a true thing. The design, it needs to be consistent. Like the icons of the smart devices, your organization, that they need to not mess that up. Or not, it's like you were saying, fragmentation hell. So yeah, controls, we had the Easter egg. So yeah, I guess the high level summary is that it's Android 10 with a handful of very useful features.
Do you think it's enough to be Android 11? Could this have been 10.1?
I've been saying this for a while. I don't think they should be doing yearly number jumps, and they should not have been since like Android Oreo.
I think the thing with point ones is I don't think people remember them. It's Google has trialed that in its history, and I don't think it's number like whole numbers are just so much easier for people to remember. Like I see in concept why they would want to do that, and that probably speaks to the Google sense of like accurately being nerdy and technical and numbering things as they properly are. But I don't. From a consumer standpoint, I don't see them making a switch back to 0.1 increments.
That is a good point.
At the same time, though, they had a good system in place before where the point and the numbers and the points didn't matter too much because people were able to just rely on the dessert name to be the branding and to be the memorable part.
That is true.
That is true, but I also do agree. What the reasoning was last year with that was... Because of the dessert names, they didn't know what the newest one was.
Really?
I think that was the reasoning Abner had in his interview or something.
Yeah, people, because it's like the translation. Unless you're in English or English aware, like people don't know, like the translations might be off. And that's not universal. But but at the same time, the alphabetical, I hope people picked up the alphabetical nature of that. Maybe they didn't.
I would honestly bet some people didn't, just because they didn't hear all of them.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. So there are just a few more Android 11 adjacent things. So the second Easter egg today, so to speak, is... So if you go to the Android website, you can see the Android 11 statue, which is a... the very basic head of the Android figurine with the number 11. But if you... Okay, I have to admit, it took me when Dave Burke, head of Android engineering, shared the picture, I wasn't like 100% that it was a real statue. It took a moment to realize that it was like an augmented reality thing. So that was AR. It's getting kind of good. Moment.
Yeah, it was convincing as long as you didn't look too close at the grass. That was the only part that was like really obvious.
So yeah, and this is the other thing. There's an Easter egg to the statue where it's true, yes. I'm going to talk about what the there's a recipe for red velvet cake, which you'll see something from us very soon about that. And yeah, because that's the internal code name for Android. And the second Easter egg there is Kyle.
Even I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not prepared for
this. Yeah, sorry, Ben. Just a huge list of features on the back. On the back of the statue, there's a huge list of all the main features that it brings.
Yeah, so that's one way to. It's neat. Was it the same 11 things as the blog post or?
Oh no, that was a much longer list.
Ooh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, like it went down the entire back, and it was not like. Big print or anything.
That's actually useful for our line. That would have been useful if we gotten that ahead of time.
Would have saved Damon a lot of work.
Would have. It definitely would have. So yeah. So the last tiny bit is it's available on the Pixel phones, obviously, day one, but it's also in beta. For five brands, if you want to give us a rundown, Ben.
So OnePlus is the biggest name here for that. They are going to they just opened up OxygenOS 11 beta, open beta for the OnePlus 8 and 8 Pro. So that's open for anybody to download right now. And given their normal schedule, the final release will probably be before the end of the year.
I have to push on OnePlus for a second. Why do you think they went developer preview then beta?
They've done that. They've done that every time.
Hmm.
Since they've been on the betas, they've been doing that every time.
I think it's a perception thing. They want to be perceived as like kind of right there with Google. So to be put something forward that seems developer seems ahead, you know?
Okay, yeah, that logic makes sense. It's just curious that if they didn't spend the time redoing their skin this year, you think they would have hit day one?
I still don't think they would do day one, just because historically speaking, OnePlus is not, they are not fast with these updates. Like, they are faster than a lot of other people, but given the work they actually have to do, they're pretty slow. So I don't think this one's going to be any different, honestly. I know a lot of people wish they wouldn't do it, but yeah, they'll still be one of the fastest, I'm sure. Like, they will have stable builds out the door well before Samsung and anyone else who matters.
Mm.
I was gonna say LG, but that doesn't really matter.
That's a given. That's a given.
Yeah, exactly. That's a given.
LG is not gonna have Android 11 until they launch a phone with Android 11.
Yeah.
That is sadly true. So the other four brands.
The rest are Xiaomi, Realme, Oppo. Was there another one? I think it was just them.
Yeah, probably.
Xiaomi and Realme both have super limited previews going on. I think Realme is just doing 100 people and Xiaomi is just taking applications. Oppo currently is doing the same limited beta, but they're doing a public beta next week, which I think is just an open download for anybody.
Mm. Yeah, so it's not like day one, obviously. They're not matching the Pixel, but it is something. So before we stop talking about Android, I wanted to touch on this Android Auto wireless dongle that you covered, Ben.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited for that. So I can talk about that. It's called AA Wireless. It's currently in crowdfunding on Indiegogo, and I think it's well surpassed its goal by now. But it's, you know, the developer who's making it made an app that you could use a second Android phone connected to your phone and then pair your main phone to it to make Android Auto wireless in your car, which is a really cool idea. But that's something very few people have the resources to do. So he's making this little dongle, and he's doing it right now just with off-the-shelf parts, but he's raising this money to make like a consumer-friendly version of it that it plugs into your car. It boots up a few seconds after you turn on your car and then puts out the wireless signals so that your phone can connect to it and power Android Auto in your car. In theory, this should feel no different than if the wireless connection was actually built into your car. The only difference is you don't have the USB port anymore. So it's a really cool idea. They're actually sending me the off-the-shelf parts to. He's going to help me put together the prototype so that way I can test it out. And I'm going to test that out on a couple of cars I have access to. You know, help them with testing it, but also to do a hands-on. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully, I think it's supposed to come next week. So it'll probably be sometime in the next couple of weeks. I'll be putting something out about that.
Do you think car makers are going to have an issue with this approach?
I think maybe a couple will, but I don't think there's anything they can really do about it.
So it plugs into USB, correct?
Or yeah, all it does is it plugs into USB just like your phone would. and basically tells the car, hey, this is the phone. Mm-hmm. And then it puts out the signal to your phone to let your phone connect over a completely standard Android Auto wireless procedure. Like nothing, it's just using official methods, but connecting the two of them. So I don't think, even if car manufacturers had an issue with this, I don't think there's anything they could do about it. If anything, just the fact that all of their methods are different for connecting your phone to Android Auto is going to be the main roadblock. Because right now he's having to test these cars out individually and hope that they work. And if they don't, he has to fix it. So,
okay. So is what was the price on the Indiegogo funding?
The early bird price was $55. I don't know if he put a retail price in there, but that 55 is with, you know, you still have to pay shipping. So I think I backed it myself and I paid $70.
So when's the target date, the launch date?
December for the people who got in early are going to get it in December, supposedly. And then the people who started backing earlier this week will get it in February and so on, just because, you know, he's getting a lot of attention on this. So
definitely.
It's going to take time to produce them. I think the most impressive thing, though, is the price, just because there are Apple CarPlay versions of this product, and those sell for like a minimum of $120.
Gee, ooh.
Apple premium on that.
I can't tell if it's just the hardware or the companies or what, but he must be selling these for barely any profit.
Are those even certified? The one made by the one that works with CarPlay? I think Apple's accessory system, I would definitely think wouldn't be.
I'm not sure.
Hmm.
But I mean, it's not like this is going to be certified either.
That's true, but speaks to the open age of Android, I guess. And yeah, it's promising. So hope that crowdfunding, hope that pans out well.
Yeah, he has now doubled his Kickstarter goal, Indiegogo goal. So
nice.
In 5 days.
Yeah, hopefully it's another success story.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So moving away from software, we saw another Pixel 5 leak 2 nights ago. And so I guess we'll start with the most interesting thing being that the model named was was 5S. And I think the going theories currently is that this is just a Google experimenting with names, or definitely a non-final name. But I am curious that that's what emerged in terms of the hardware model. So,
right. As I recall from the other night, Michal over at XDA had, there was some old tweet from August where he had a source that told him about a Pixel 5S, and the same source mentioned a Pixel 4a XL, which we presume is the Pixel 4a 5G.
Mm-hmm.
So that would mean that the Pixel 5S is probably just an early working name for what is now the Pixel 5.
Yeah, working name. That's a good way to put it. Because otherwise, because within these rumors, was there a Pixel 5? Would there have been a Pixel 5? I think one rumor, I forgot who tweeted it, but that the Pixel 4a 5G was going to be a Pixel 5 or something along those lines. Again, I forgot the rumor, but it was, the source was verifiable.
I don't remember.
I think it was Android, somebody at Android Central. Apologies for not remembering a Twitter account. But yeah, it was a curious naming scheme by Google if they did that, especially given what we know now. But at the same time, it kind of explains why the phones were basically the same.
But I mean, you could say the same thing about the Pixel 4a, which looks the same as well. All three phones look the same. They could all, unless that was part of it too, that there would just be three of the same phone.
Actually, I would have been fine with them calling the 4A the Pixel 5. I kind of would have been fine with that.
The honestly. Pixel 5 or the 5A?
The Pixel 4A being called the Pixel 5.
Hmm. I mean, I could see an argument for being 5A. That way it's all one series that all looks the same. You know, you got the Pixel 5A, you got the Pixel 5S, and you got
Pixel
5A XL? I don't know.
A regular Pixel 5, maybe, some other?
I think maybe. It doesn't matter what they do. It's going to be weird this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a given.
That's a true takeaway. It's going to be weird. Okay, so that's like the weird software naming thing. And we saw a picture of the back of the phone. And I do not like this speckle, these specks of white or silver within the black material. Oh, I do not like that.
It is really weird.
It reminds me of cheap plastic or whatever, like container plastic.
Yeah, I mean, I would be okay with it if it was just the sides, you know, like how the Pixel 4 had the black outline.
But it's on the phone. It's on the fingerprint sensor too. Yeah. It's so weird.
It means it's going to be visible even with a case on. Yeah.
I mean, we can hope the green one doesn't do it.
Oh, they're definitely going to do it on the green one.
Oh, please, no. That sounds horrible.
Yeah, like, that does sound really awful.
It's like the mint. Oh, do you remember the Pixel? They had the like a 10-second video for the Pixel 4a, like a design video.
Yeah, and it had the mint color. Oh, yeah, that's probably what they're going to do.
And they had that speckled mint. Like, I don't remember, like, was it like ice cream? What were they going for, that material? But whatever it was, it definitely had speckles. And, oh, man, the green one is going to, like the black one, you get the pass maybe because you barely see the specks of white. But depending how they do the green one, it's going to be super weird.
I mean, it could look like mint chocolate chip ice cream maybe, but that still doesn't sound very attractive.
Yeah. I was so on board with everything about this phone until we started getting hardware information. I don't like them going for plastic and making it exactly the same as the 4A. And just this design is not good.
I mean, we don't necessarily know that it's plastic, right?
Yeah, we don't.
But the only other option would be metal for this design, which would cut out wireless charging.
Yeah. Well, wait.
It can't be glass because there's no... It's clearly a unibody. It can't be glass. Unless the whole thing is glass, which is a nightmare.
What if there was a way, and this is crazy, I'm just like, what if there was a way that they could have it be one material up until the part where it needs to have the wireless charging? Because we saw on that Pixel 5S, there was some funky lines, probably about where the wireless charging would be.
That is something crazy that Apple would totally would successfully do. I don't think Google at its thought would be able to pull it off.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And we'd have definitely seen the seams in pictures because that, yeah, I agree. That would be crazy impressive. Or if they're using some kind of, I don't know, composite. But yeah, that would have been very cool.
Whatever the case, it's just, it's weird and it doesn't make any sense for the successor to a flagship phone. Like, I'm okay with the processor cut. I'm okay with every decision they made, but it's going to be so weird going from the Pixel 4 with the glass and the matte and all that to a plastic phone.
They might be able to save it with like, the texture, but that's going to be, not many people are going to be able to touch the phone. One thing, so I don't know. It's before they buy it, so that's it's. I guess it has to be a cost cutting measure, doesn't it?
They have to have some way to make it seem premium, though. That was the whole. It seems like they're still trying to make this the premium phone, because if it's not a premium phone, why would you buy it over the Pixel 4a?
Yeah, and again, like the buying advice that most people, that tech sites and reviewers are going to push, is that 5G is not yet worth it this year, especially with people staying home for Wi-Fi coverage. So it's the sell, like the Pixel 4a, again, immense value, all that, you can't praise it enough, but the sell is going to be very hard for everything else above it.
I mean, the sell for this phone is basically it's got a bigger battery, wireless charging, and I guess it's probably going to have an IP rating. I mean, we don't even know that.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, if they're downgrading the hardware this much, who's to say they don't? I don't know. It's just such a tough.
Oh, I don't know about you, but does your Pixel 4a flex like the rear? I feel like there's some plastic flex to it, especially without a case.
No, it feels fine to me. It feels solid.
Curious. But you can you can obviously feel it's plastic, but it really does feel thin.
Oh, wait, if I hold it upside down, I feel a little bit.
Compared to the Pixel 3a, like the plastic, it definitely feels thinner and not in a good way.
Yeah, because I don't feel it on my 3A.
Kyle, as somebody who's interested in the Pixel 5, does this plastic body change your approach? Or are you still regretting not getting a Pixel 4 today?
I regret not getting the Pixel 4. I really do. I mean, I want the better battery. I just want a Pixel 4 with good battery life. That's all I want. And this ain't that, by any stretch.
Yeah. The old Pixel 4. It's, again, we'll see. We'll definitely see how it ends up going. So to our last topic of today, foldables. Oh man, was it a week for foldables. I guess we should eat our vegetables first and talk about the Razer first. The Razer 5G, it's the Motorola Razer 5G, but in the US, it's just going to be called the Moto Razer or the Motorola Razer. Motorola's press note like explicitly said that it's not going to have 5G on the back, which is like very curious. I guess the it's slightly improved is the big takeaway. They changed up the design. I think Daniel Bader from Android Central put it best in that this isn't a Razer 2. It's really a revision on the original Razer, and it's really what the Razer should have been, the first Razer should have been, in terms of build quality, in terms of like having an updated processor. So anybody interested in it?
I have no interest in this style of foldables.
Yeah, no, this style of foldable just feels more cumbersome.
Yeah, like the reality is that where people are going to have their phones open, especially if they're at home, like I would not be shocked if people, like in this form factor, they're just going to keep the phone open all the time.
Well, I think this is a form factor that doesn't make sense for you, for me. It doesn't make sense for us. It does make sense for
women with no pockets, people who have
does make sense for that, but just for people in general who they do want an actual disconnect from their phones when they're not using them, and the people who do genuinely want to save the space, like it's not a minimal thing. Like cutting your phone in half when you put it in your pocket is a genuine benefit.
Yes, no, but I think people get the trade-off of it's a big phone. Of course, it's big in my pocket. People have big wallets all the time. So that's
there is a customer for this more so, but that customer is much better served by Samsung's Z Flip.
In terms of like build quality,
Samsung's got they're better on the build quality, and I think honestly, just by the time we get to. Anyone who can do long-term coverage on a Razer, by that point, we will see how much better Samsung serves them on build quality. But also just The Z Flip is a better spec device, so it's going to run smoother. It's going to feel better for longer. It's a better design. Like, it is better looking as a phone. And
so
the only reason anyone would buy a Razer is because they want the cover display. And I think on this form factor, it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, so that's a very the observation you made is very interesting. So you would think that people who want to disconnect, they would absolutely not want to have a cover display, which leads to the question whether what Samsung is going to do on the next Z Flip. Is it going to have a bigger cover display?
I think it will, but I don't think it will be to the point where the Razer is,
where you can have a full keyboard for whatever.
Yeah, no, that's stupid.
Yes,
that's stupid. This is a phone that exists for enthusiasts, and that's it.
And nostalgia.
Yeah, nostalgia is the big seller here.
The Z Flip, like, that one actually serves in a, not a need, but it does serve a market. I think it's on this. I think for the second generation of that phone, the only difference we'll see on the cover display is that it won't be just the little tiny strip. It might be a little bit bigger and kind of like hidden in the glass. So it'll be better for like notifications and.
I'd beg of Samsung to make it an always on display. Please have
time. Yeah, that would be really cool.
So, I like how we're talking about the Z Flip 2 instead of the Razer, but the form factor of the Z Flip is so weird. It's a perfect square. It, like, the Razer has it beat on that form factor alone. You putting a square thing in your pocket is the same level of obtrusiveness as putting a big phone, in my opinion.
I don't think it is. Because it's still, yes, it's not any thinner, it's not any, it's still just as wide. But the thing is, it's half the height, and that is a big difference. Like, especially, you know, you're carrying around a pair of earbuds in your pocket. Now you can fit those comfortably without them falling out of your pocket. Let's say you have a front pocket wallet. Now you can actually put both in your pocket, potentially.
I'm sure.
It's just, it is a genuine thing that I think a lot of people find interesting and worthwhile. I think Samsung does it much better than Motorola is at all capable of for now.
For now, yeah. Again, they're using a plastic display again, a plastic OLED, which is, they weren't able to get the ultra thin glass. Corning hasn't announced their flexible glass thing yet, have they? What Samsung developed, what UTG was a Samsung invention, correct?
I think Samsung sources it from somebody, but I can't remember who. But it's not Corning.
Yeah. I would not be shocked if Corning's supply is like locked up by Apple if they're doing a foldable. We would not be surprised. Because I feel like Corning is like hinting that they have something, the real thing. So we'll have to wait for that. But yeah, Razer, it's more like the Razer 1.5, if you're being generous.
1.5G.
Nice. Nice. So Surface Duo Day was today. Kyle, take us away.
Oh, I'm so upset. The Surface Duo released today, two reviews. Just Everybody's praising the hardware. They love the hardware, they love the hinge, they don't like the software. And looking at the reviews, looking at actual instances of it acting up, I can't say as I blame them.
Don't know why it took them so long. From all accounts, Microsoft announced this last October. They said they were hitting the holiday season. Take the extra month, holiday season being November to December. They should have taken the extra 1 month or 2 months to get the software right. I don't know why they did it now. Did they want to compete with the Fold 2?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. The best explanation I saw was, I don't remember whose video, but it was the explanation was that they should have just stuck with waiting until Android 11 was out, because Android 11 has Hinge APIs and things like that built in natively rather than relying on Surface Duo specific things that developers need to follow.
Yeah, that, imagine how impressive that would have been if the Duo launched with 11, but no, it's not. So yeah, the reviews, is the accurate descriptor. It's software, hopefully software can fix it, but waiting for good software is always a gamble, especially for something this expensive.
If I'm being honest though, I still kind of want one.
Yeah.
I don't $1,400 want one anymore. Uh-huh. I still want one. I can still see it being used for something good. Like, you just have to, it seems like you have to kind of work around some of the quirks. Like, it seems great for multitasking. It seems bad for spreading one app across the two screens. It seems like that's still clunky, broken, but the multitasking where you open up a duo of apps or whatever you want to call it, that seems to be working well enough.
You don't think that's like too much cognitive load, like having, I know, I guess you can replicate this at holding two phones side by side. I'm sure we've all done that. We on this team have done that. So we have access to phones. But I don't know if having it being physically connected makes a difference, but I'm somewhat, the cognitive load of having two things seems weird. Especially when you, okay, on a laptop, you have multiple things on your screen all the time, but you have a trackpad, you have fine motor control over, you don't have to exert, you don't have to drastically move your hand from side to side. And it's curious how, whether on a touchscreen display where you do have to physically move, whether that's taxing.
That's true. That's true. The kind of thing you can only speak to from experience.
So the one disappointing thing was there's like basic, the pen support is very basic. They're not, I mean, you can write on it and maybe that's what most people just need, but you can't use the pen anywhere to write and have OCR and to write and have your scribbles convert into text. So that's not universal. I believe that's like you have to use OneNote or another optimized experience. Yeah, it's what gets me is that they didn't hit the polish on day one. Like that should have been the bare minimum.
Yeah, it just seems like they rushed it for very little reason.
Yeah, and like the inside baseball of this story is that they received reviewers received a last minute update, same with consumers. Day one, consumers had to download an update that fixed the majority of issues, and that is really cutting it close. I don't know, maybe to be charitable, they're already working on Android 11 and they shifted their focus, but hopefully Android 11 comes out, like, I don't know, can they make a year-end deadline?
I mean, if they were going to do that, they should have just held the phone in the first place. The original date they, or not date, but the original window they gave was holiday 2020. I think they could theoretically have Android 11 ready for holiday 2020, and they could have just released the phone on Android 11 and have made an even stronger impression for that being the only foldable on Android 11.
Yeah, it's the timeline. It's, again, everybody's praising the hardware, the software, which I know Microsoft is a software company. You would have thought they would have hit it, is disappointing.
Yeah, and I mean, it should only get better with time, though, because it was only this year that they brought all of the Android developers in-house instead of being, you know, hired through a third party, as it were.
Yeah, that. Yeah, it's, well, we'll see what happens there. And the stark contrast of today is the Fold 2, which there are several reviews of that out right now. And that is, again, everybody's praising the hardware. And it's funny to see how, who do you think has the most polished software experience, Samsung or Microsoft?
I'm going to say probably Samsung, just because it doesn't have as many, it doesn't have as much to worry about. Like on the Duo, you have to constantly be thinking there's an actual gap in between the displays. But on the Fold, there's not. Like on the Fold, you might have some apps like Instagram plays really weird with the aspect ratios because they're very abnormal. But it works, and there's no major issues. Like as far as I know, I mean, the main issue is just the normal complaints of Android apps are not very good at gigantic screens.
And I know the screen is big, but it's still so narrow.
Are you talking about the front display or the inside?
The inside display. I think having two very tall side by side apps. If you choose to use it that way, I don't think, like, I don't know, I was looking at people Twitter on the Fold 2, and it's a bit, it's narrow, it's just narrow. I don't see what the, like, if I were to use the Fold 2, I would flip after opening it, I would flip it so that I could have two sizable feeds side by side, sizable apps side by side.
Like hold it sideways?
Yeah.
Like 90 degree turn? That's interesting.
It just doesn't seem it like Twitter looks ridiculous on it. It's just too narrow.
Yeah, if they could make a Samsung Fold that had a wider form factor like that, I could see myself using one. Something that is wide enough for multitasking, like you're saying.
I am actually surprised that's not a thing. Like just a normal, sized phone. Make it a little, obviously it's gonna be thicker because it folds, but I am surprised that they haven't done that or didn't do that on either variation.
Yeah, make a fold the size of the S20.
Yeah, that.
I mean, I'd be good with that. Yeah. Like the small, like the S20 or the S20 Plus, match that. On the cover display, and then just you open it up, you have double that. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if you're only compromising for the hardware, you might as well like get the best screen possible. Like nobody expects this to be compact anymore.
And if you've ever carried around a DS or 3DS in your pocket, it's no different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one interesting thing I saw from the Fold 2 reviews was how. Like in terms of optimized apps, yes, there are Samsung apps, but I think more than one reviewer noted how Microsoft apps work pretty well, like in terms of dragging copied text or something across the windows, which is the interesting thing about like the state of Android foldable apps right now is that you need third-party buy-in, and right now the biggest third-party buy-in is Microsoft because they're a hardware maker and they want to get the Duo right. But I don't see what other developers are doing this buy-in. I haven't seen a real commitment by Google to optimize their apps for the Duo. I know Google Duo and YouTube is optimized for Samsung's Flex mode. But I haven't seen them make a big commitment about optimizing the rest of their Android apps.
I mean, they have to optimize everything both for just for foldables in general, because for one, if they want that form factor to succeed, and from what they've told us in like fireside chats, they want that form factor to succeed. But just in the fact that they might have their own in the pipeline.
Yeah, that they... I... still don't know if that's enough buy-in from the Android team or from the individual app teams, like the way Google is organized is. So, okay, what apps do you want to be optimized for foldables? Productivity, Google Drive, Google Docs, maybe Absolutely. Google Keep. How about the other apps? What, YouTube, kinda, you want optimized for a big screen?
I think any app, and this is a very broad description, but I think any app that plays, that can play a video or does have, can have lengthy text mm-hmm. should be optimized for the folding and unfolding. So like, for example, Chrome should, and I think it probably is, but it should be able to, you know, you might be reading something on the cover display and say, you know what, I'm going to sit down, I want to read this whole thing. You pop it open and nothing changes. It just fills the space. You know, yeah. doesn't have to reload or anything. And like, let's say again, you open YouTube, you check your subscriptions, you start playing a video, you sit down, you want to watch the whole thing, you just open it up, it goes full screen. I think those are the kind of apps that the foldables will really benefit from having optimized. I think a lot of others, like Twitter, I think it that one does work fine if you unfold it, but to me it doesn't really matter if it does, because it's unlikely that you're going to be going through Twitter reading tweets and then say all of a sudden, you know what, I want to do this on the big screen, because you're not really getting any benefit there. If you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally. Yeah, that's a good point. But that also brings up the point to me is, are cover displays here to stay? I'm not sold. I still don't like the concept of cover displays because it's inefficient to have two separate displays. Like, I think this is a different equation if you have like a foldable, like the ZTE Axon M, where it's the displays are facing out of already automatically, and that you get a built-in cover display, so to speak. But I'm still unsure about Samsung's approach of having literally two different displays on it.
It's got to add to the cost, and it's got to add to the thickness of the device. Yeah,
and like the Duo barely gets. I guess you can use the Duo just one screen at a time, if you fold it all the way, and that's like vaguely a cover display. But you don't otherwise. I don't think you really get the benefits of like a cover display optimization on the Duo so much.
No, not at all. I mean, the cover display of the Surface Duo is the sneak peek preview that you can do when you kind of like peek open the hinge.
Mm.
That's your cover display.
It's not even AOD. It's not even ambient always on display. It's just they're just lighting up the screen, a tiny part of the screen. Yeah. Well, that it's not always on. So, the hardware, just to say something a bit more positive, again, the hardware is positive, and as Samsung has shown, they should be commended for how far they took this form factor in a year. But it's now down to the software, and that's ultimately down to Google, and they have a big partner in Microsoft now. But I don't know if Android tablets are one thing to take to serve as the historical guide. When do foldables get better on the software front?
When you put it in the context of tablets, yeah. The answer could be never.
No, I agree. The only thing I see is that foldables do have I don't want to say that they are the future, but they do have a place in the future of smartphones.
Because people just want one device, or because hard brass. Let's take this scenario. Would you rather have one device or like a phone and a pretty cheap tab and a tablet? I think most people are fine with the second, with two devices. I don't think there's a big demand for convergence, do you?
I don't know if that's the whole market that they're going after.
Fair, that's fair. It's very true.
Not to mention, like, if I had a tablet, I wouldn't use it. But if the tablet was also the device I already have in my hand and in my pocket, maybe I would use it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're, you know, just looking at the Galaxy Fold's form factor, mm-hmm. I think there is so much potential to that. And realistically, the only thing it's going to take for that to get, like, I think the hardware is now at the point where, yes, it's still not quite as durable as a normal phone, but I think it's at the point where it is ready for people to buy it. I think the main roadblock right now is that it's still ridiculously expensive. Mm-hmm. And once we get to the point where let's say there's a foldable in the Fold 2 style, like obviously the Z Flip already exists and you can go get one for the same price as a Note 20 Ultra. So the same price as a normal high-end phone.
Mm-hmm. Normal.
Yeah. Let's say the Fold 2 eventually gets to that price. I think at that price, this form factor would be pretty popular because there would be people who would say, I can find enough value out of this to pay that price. Or this could replace me having a tablet. Or, you know, once the world goes back to normal and we're traveling again, you know, oh, now I don't have to pack an extra device to take on the plane or on the trip.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that use case. I don't know how much people are striving for less things in life. That's like a very cynical take. If there's one less thing to pack, or one less thing to carry in your bag.
One less thing to charge.
Yeah, that's true. Thinking long term, I don't see that being the phone, to be honest. Like, okay, if we're being in alphabet scoop fashion, if we're thinking long term, I'm thinking augmented reality. But in the short, long, midterm, I think there's more interesting stuff going on in laptops, like Surface Neo, for example, or that kind of stuff. I think if your phone is going to become your productivity device, if people are looking for a productivity device, I think they're inherently looking for a bigger screen. And if they're looking for a bigger screen, they would go to their laptop. And I think there's more potential innovation there and less trade-offs versus trying to do everything on your phone.
That's true. Imagine, you know, you could bring some convergence over to the laptop by introducing some things from the phone, like, you know, like ChromeOS is doing with this phone hub, just bring phone features and make them accessible from the laptop. Yeah, that could make sense. Mm. It's not exactly totable, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, yeah, it's curious where this is going, where this form factor is going, back to original discussion of when it gets better. Android 11? Maybe?
I think we'll see hopefully Google does an Android developer conference later this year. I think if they do a strong enough push for foldables there, like they did a little bit of a push last year, I think if they really hammer it home, I think we'll be on the right track for Android apps to really support foldables.
We're running a minute long, but I do want to introduce this thought, a cynical thought, but for Google's apps to support foldables, do they need a Pixel device? Do they need a Pixel device, or can they rely on a third-party device? Because if we're looking at the historic time frame, Google needed, so to speak, they needed their own internal device for their people, for their app developers to develop on early to create the best Android app experience possible. So is a foldable basically guaranteed, required for Google's first party apps to get better?
not a doubt in my mind. Which is a good thing if that timeline that we saw is any kind of accurate. That you know, the idea of a foldable at least being in the development process, that could help push things at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's again, wait and see. It's always what these discussions end on in terms of Android and new form factors. Thank you everyone for joining us this week. You can listen to us on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and on 9to5google.com. We address the audio, so it should be going correctly on our feeds. And you can listen to the podcast on 9to5google.com by tomorrow. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Kyle and Ben for joining this week.
Bye.
Absolutely. See ya.
Bye.